Hey everybody, it's Jared from Hey I'm Walking here. I want to take a quick ad break today to talk to you about Anchor, the free podcast distribution platform. I use Anchor, and there's tools in the app that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor's great because it will even distribute your podcast for you, so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and all the major platforms. You can even make money from your podcast with no minimum listenership. It's everything you need to make in a podcast in one place. So get started today and download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. All right, let's start the show. Right, we are recording. Derek, how's it going, my friend? How have you been?
I've been a little bored, a little on the like gaining weight side, and my God, I somehow am still always tired, even with nothing to do but sleep and eat.
Right? Yeah, that is pretty much where quarantine has taken us. Have you been working still during quarantine and stuff?
I got lucky to hop on the web development train a little bit before this started. I mean, turns out a lot of people needed their website really quick about 7 months ago. Boy, when was March? 8 months? Whatever it was.
Yeah.
It's been almost the busiest time I've ever had.
Wow.
And yeah, it's kind of, it's offset by then not going out and celebrating it.
Yeah. So are you in an agency right now, or are you all freelance?
No, I'm in an agency that I was kind of like was following for a while. I got super, super lucky to get in there. It's a like small tight knit agency right in Grand Rapids, named Mighty. They're awesome. They're high end. It's a lot of work, but it's a lot of fun, man.
Yeah. And it's probably a good time to introduce you to the audience. This is Derek Moore. He's a friend slash former colleague of mine. We worked together at a small business a few years ago. Remain nameless for now.
As hard as we can.
Yeah. And we had very interesting times in the dysfunction that we worked in. So I'm hoping that your new employer is a lot more organized, because I know mine is.
Oh, yeah. It was a whole new world stepping out of there.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll just leave it at the new world.
Yeah. But it was good for, you know, the pre 26. Oh no, that was about 2016. It was right about the time everything got chaotic. So maybe it was fitting that we were in that spot. It set a tone for the next few years.
Yeah. I think I left like April of 2016, and that was like right when like everything was kind of ramping up to be nuts, and it was interesting times. The thing I wanted to talk about with that is we worked in the awesome place of Grand Rapids, and you're still there living the dream, Grand Rapids dream. I moved to the east side after that, but how has Grand Rapids been treating you pre-quarantine?
Pre-quarantine, it was actually going great. I live close enough to walk, so that kind of opens up your options when you can not really have to calculate in how am I driving home after I have a lot of fun. And it's kind of like, well, you know, we could take a $4 Uber, you know. It was treating me great. There's a surprising amount that was starting to pop up just as it was kind of starting to, you know, it felt like it was kind of getting bigger, and it was going to be an art prize year, which I don't love. You know, I'm sure, I don't know if anyone is familiar with art prize outside of the Midwest. Actually, I think it gets a pretty good amount of attention.
Yeah, it gets, it's pretty out there now, but it's like Grand Rapids is like
DeVos sponsored art festival that was supposed to be this little thing and then ended up kind of like taking over the city for, does it go for like a month now?
Cause it goes for, I think like there's a 3 week period. It's tough to, I don't know. It's tough to move during that entire time. Yeah. So I usually get it. I see what's in my vicinity on my walks and that's about it.
Yeah.
But it's a strange oxymoron of a corporate art show.
Yeah.
You know, put on. But, you know, it got some stuff prettified, you know, like it was kind of nice. We had actually kind of an impromptu art prize this year with the board designs. I don't know if you've been following.
No, I haven't.
They, after May rolled around, a bunch of shops boarded up. And some mostly prematurely, kind of, I don't want to look cool or whatever, that they were distressed. But yeah, a bunch of murals ended up kind of getting painted on it by the residents.
Oh, that's cool.
It looks better than like Art Prize.
Yeah. Yeah. The thing that was interesting about Art Prize is because I remember it from being at Grand Valley in 2010, which I feel like was close around the time it started. I could be wrong there, but
that sounds right.
Yeah. And then it just got bigger and bigger and bigger and more like out of control. And like, I remember like the flying pig was a thing one year. Like that was bonkers. And,
Reader for the dragon year.
Yeah, it's just crazy. It's just like the stuff they come up with is just, it's awesome, but it's like we mentioned earlier, it's just funny that it's like, because I remember everybody was like, oh, Art Prize, that's not going to be a thing. And then I was like, it's backed by like a bunch of billionaires, and I think it's going to get pretty big.
You're like, kind of just going to force it and censor it and say like, well, no, it's art, but it's, you know, good art.
Yeah, it's our kind of art. So
art that doesn't point any fingers at us. We like it.
Yeah. No commentary on like our pyramid schemes or anything like that. Yeah. And that's where this podcast will just abruptly end for all of our Grand Rapids viewers.
Yeah, sorry.
We're pretty sure the radio waves are owned out there.
If I start kind of cutting in and out, just send a text, that same one that you texted earlier, and just check on me.
Yeah. So did you ever submit to Art Prize or have any friends that submitted to Art Prize or anything like that?
I didn't, because as much as I make fun of it, like, I'm also not an artist. Like, I can't come up with these things. Like, I don't have a mind to like make a statue or to just kind of create something from scratch. Like, as a designer, I more require somebody to pay me and give me an idea, and then I'll go running. Like, I don't just kind of churn this up out of my soul.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of a little bit different mentality, and so I hate to ride them too hard.
Yeah.
I can't quite do it.
Yeah.
And then there's even just some, like, some people really have that idea for like prettifying, like making like space look great, you know, like outside they get, painted a bunch of, oh, I'm going to mess up the title of it now. It was like 26 women, like one for each letter is painted on all these electrical boxes around the city. Like,
oh, wow.
Stuff like that. I can't come up with that. It's got you know, someone hand painted a little story into each one of them, you know, and a illustration, like, you know, that's something I would have never come up with. I'd have like a computer they could stop at and check out my website. Like, cool. But the real artistic.
Yeah. So how did you get into like the art design world? Did you start like in the illustration, or was it all more like computer focused on your end, or?
I went to school for it, but it kind of was intentionally going for video editing, or originally going for video editing.
Okay.
You kind of seem like you were also the guy in high school when you had a project, you did the video project with your friends.
Yeah.
Just because, like, are you kidding me? We were going to do that anyway. Like, yeah. I'll turn that in for a grade. So, yeah, I was churning out a couple, like, one video every month or two with my friends. And thank God they're all just kind of lost to technology. Nobody uploaded them to YouTube at the time. And I, you know, no one can see the acne and little flip out surfer hair that I had at the time. But that was the original goal, was to just kind of keep doing that. And then it turned out that's not a real job. And design is a lot of fun if you're that, like, nitpicky detail kind of person that I evidently am.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just kind of, you know, back to that video editing, I was a technical person. So web design was kind of a natural fit. I got kind of lucky in that I never really struggled to figure out what I wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
It bounced a couple of times, but I mean, bounced in the same general area.
Yeah.
I didn't have that, like, oh, I got to go back to school moment, you know, like, man, I don't have the discipline to go back to school at this point. Quarantine's really proved that.
Yeah, it is tough. My wife is in nursing school right now, and it's tough when you are like pushing 30 and quarantine is here. And like, I'm sure there's some days where she would rather be in the classroom. Like, it's nice to be home, but like also our dog is like super excited that we're home all the time. So
same.
I'm sure that there's some days that she's like, man, I just wish I was studying on campus away from this family. And I don't blame her, because sometimes I'm like, man, it'd be nice to like be in the office for once.
It took me a while to realize my girlfriend goes away on the weekends a lot of times and takes all her books with her, and then just kind of like she'll come back overnight with the dog too, and just kind of like, oh, I'm starting to see that maybe I'm the distraction. Seems to like still get stuff done, but yeah, it always seems to be like she must have that need for the classroom too,
because
evidently someone coming around and telling a joke every 10 minutes just isn't that funny when you're trying to study.
So for learning like web development and stuff like that, are you like 50-50 on like the code / the design part of it, or do you like favor more doing the code or the design, or which kind of meshes well with your style?
I tried to dance the line of both. I thought I was a pretty good, you know, like interface designer and developer. Seeing people that like specialize in both, I realized I wasn't quite great at either. I've seen some really talented people do some pretty cool stuff that I just wish I could do. And I thought that's what I'd be doing now. So I've actually kind of more jumped into development. It's a little more interesting. It's almost like learning a language every couple months, because I, you know, we get a new client that comes in and they have different needs, and you know, their framework is old and they need some stuff updated, and you kind of it seems like it's one of those like, well, you know, you're a coder, you just kind of code that, and like, no, it's kind of like knowing Italian and then someone gives you a Spanish manuscript and they're like, all right, we need this next month,
yeah,
you just translate the whole thing, like, okay, I have an idea, but I don't really know.
Yeah, it's a really good way to put it.
Yeah, so you wrote documentation at the company we work for. So I mean, you know how like intricate it can get, and just how like, oh man, this is verbose. This is tough, you know. And like,
yeah. And then, so is it? Is it easier for you to take an existing website and fix it, or is it easier for clients to come up to you and just say, hey, we want to start from scratch? Because I know kind of that blank canvas can be intimidating too.
Yeah, I used to be a fix guy until, I don't know, it's recently, the sites that I work on now are just a little more complex than when I was trying to do the designer developer route. Like these are just impressive, and so like one wrong move, you can take a lot of stuff down. And so I actually kind of prefer starting from scratch now, because then at least I know where all these wires are that I could accidentally rip by accident, you know. It's when something goes down and you're kind of like, oh man, I didn't think about that. I don't think that server backs up at all, and like it's just a it's much more hairy working with real stuff that has to get converted to a newer technology.
So what languages are you like real comfortable in? Because I know there's like a bajillion different web development languages that people can use to make websites, but
yeah,
what is kind of like your go-to tool set?
I'm the PHP front end / full stack developer guy, so that's generally nothing much more than Twig or HTML for markup, and then PHP for logic SAS for styling. And then we're actually just a, I try to write straight JavaScript mm-hmm. for any kind of animations or scripting. I was a jQuery leaner, but evidently the purists that I've been associating with lately are just, that for good reason, they're not so into it. So I had to, you know, kind of crack my knuckles and get into the old school stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, it's fun, but again, it's like that whole, that's four very different languages that you have to know.
Right.
Kind of, well, maybe they're not all languages, but you know, they're intense.
Yeah. In a former life, I used to study French, and I remember when I was learning some language stuff, I'm not very well versed in like actual languages anymore. I used to do like a decent amount of CSS, but I remember learning that was similar to learning French. Like it's pretty remarkable, which I think I read something too that like people who study like liberal arts majors like English and literature and all that stuff, if they end up switching into the CS field later in that web development frame, they actually pick up pretty quickly because they have that kind of language foundation, which was really cool to read. So what were you gonna say?
I said, no, yeah, that totally makes sense.
Yeah.
Kind of like learning, constantly learning to translate. Yeah.
Yeah.
I totally see that.
What were, where'd you go to school at? Did you go around Grand Rapids or?
No, that was, so around 2010 when we were referencing our prize, I couldn't really remember because I was deep next to Canada, in the UP. It was at Northern.
Oh yeah. I remember that. I remember we talked about that once. And, yep,
everyone knows one person that was there.
Yeah,
you never know. Like it's always kind of like that—the guy that you're like, I remember him, but he kind of, he kind of just disappeared. And yeah, he disappeared. He went to Northern. it's always that guy. Like, hey, he loves it. He kind of just, you know, didn't see him for a while, and I kind of just see him here and there. It's usually the report I get from people that have heard of it.
So what inspired the trip to make it to Northern? Because that is a choice to go up there.
It's definitely a choice. It's going to sound ridiculous. I've loved snow.
Okay.
This is not gray and gloomy and all. Oh, you can't see it. It's all reflecting. Oh, it's reflecting really badly. Oh, man, this is good quality. It's not gray enough. It's not cold enough for me. I wanted blizzards. And so I wanted to go to hockey on the weekends, you know, just in walking distance. I had a bunch of friends that I gained up there. I mean, I didn't dig high school super well down here. And so, it was kind of like for a reset with just only things that I like.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, it was 4 years of just things that I like. And that was something.
But you had a good time though. You enjoyed it.
I can't recommend visiting the UP enough because you just won't see too many other places that are that remote, that cold, within mm-hmm. like the east half of the U.S.
Mm-hmm.
Like I've recently went to Maine and like it's pretty remote and like there's a lot of small little towns, but man, the UP there's just nothing.
Right.
You get these two highways that are kind of going in similar directions 15 miles apart and like that's it. That covers your stretch and there's more snowmobile traffic in the winter time mostly actually.
Right.
And the reason I know that is there's a strip club that is well known in the entire town to bring their A game during November 15th, which Michigan people will know is deer season.
Yeah.
There's a snowmobile path that leads right to it, and that's their big season.
Nice.
So yeah, it's a cold. It's a different life up there in the cold. It's it was something it's my least regretful like large change I've ever done. It was it definitely like changed everything. It was like, okay, well, I'm just gonna kind of do my option from now on.
Well, Grand Rapids is kind of perfect then because like they get like they get decent, you know, lake effect snow, and you're also not buried the entire time. Like you could drive if you need to.
You can't. Yeah, you can. I bottomed out. Man, that polar vortex. I bottomed out Subaru
Oh, wow.
Multiple times. It was that intense.
Wow.
In GR. And that's a pretty tough. I would get on a commercial for them. So to say I got stuck is hard for me to say.
Yeah, people underestimate the Subarus, man. I really didn't. I was always, because coming from the east side, I was always a big three kind of guy. As long as it's not foreign. And then when I met my wife, her dad, my father-in-law, is huge into Subarus, real big into Subarus, and we've had a bunch of them, and they are just great. They're good machines, man. Like, they just they're just built different, which is interesting, because I never thought that they were going to be that good of a car that they were. And the fact that you bought three of them is nuts.
Yeah. Or I should say I bought them the same one out three times.
Okay.
I don't own three Subarus. Design is not that great of a industry.
Yeah.
That's probably the way I would spend it too if it was. Like, how about another really kind of ugly vehicle that has all-wheel drive?
Yeah.
It almost spurs on the other Michigan guy stereotype. Of usually there is the big three guy, but unfortunately he's also probably wearing camouflage and attempting to kidnap the governor these days. The other guy is kind of the tight pants and the Christian school upbringing and the Subaru and the right in the middle of that one. The biggest West Side stereotype.
It is weird to see kind of the difference in people that grow up in Michigan, because there's people that are really just on both sides of different, like, if people, and I mean, that's probably more reflective of the country, but I feel like if you go to some states, like, there's like it's a pretty good representation, but like, if you go to Grand Rapids, those people are like different than the people in Detroit, and those people are different than the UP, and, it's just, it's really interesting, because I don't know. I growing up, I was more of like the leaning towards the camouflage type deal, like, you know.
Yeah, same, actually.
Yeah. And so then, like, you know, you go and you have like these different experiences and stuff. Like, I went to Grand Rapids, which is definitely more, you know, left wing city. Well, kind of. It's owned by more like right wing people. But, the people there are a little bit more left thinking. And that kind of opened up my eyes to the diversity of everything. So that was cool. But
being in college too, when everyone's just attempting to learn anything.
Yeah. Did you see the SNL skit of them their take on the governor kidnapping?
You know, I haven't seen this week's episode. I watched Bill Burr's last week, laughed until I cried on the Sam Adams ad.
Oh, that was so good.
And then, I just haven't followed up with this week's. I usually am more key if I know who the guest is.
Yeah.
I usually can get one out of every three I usually recognize. And so I kind of am hit and miss, and I just happen to miss the most recent one, but
yeah,
I'm hoping that it's Cecily was Whitmer again.
No. Cecily. So it was, they had Issa Rae as the guest, but what they did was they did like a, it was almost like a big boy commercial called Flapjacks, and they had like the commercial, then it cuts to like three white guys like making like a terrorist video, and it's just, I'll let you watch. It's good though, but
I'm pumped for that. Yeah,
because overall that episode was kind of but it was it had some good ones. That was a good one. But how crazy is that?
SNL fan, because you mentioned that episode was and I feel like every time I lead a conversation with, have you seen this SNL clip? I am always met with, oh, it's just not funny anymore.
Yeah.
Every time I say it, and that's, I've never found that to be true. Like, in any era other than maybe like the early 2000s, I can't remember. Oh, no, that would have been like Sandler and
Will Ferrell.
Yeah, no, there's always a good era.
Yeah. So for me, so here's my opinion on like SNL. So I think I mentioned this a little bit in the last episode, but basically, SNL is still good, but people don't like the fact that it's being more representative, and The other thing too with SNL, because I get that response all the time when I'm like, "Hey, have you ever seen this SNL skit?" And they're like, "It's not that great." And I'm like, "The format of the show is really not that great anymore. Like people's attention span is not built for Saturday Night Live anymore. Like it's not built for someone to come do a monologue and then them watch a bunch of sketches. And every time, almost 9 times out of 10, somebody sends me an SNL bit, it's a digital one because the digital ones are easier to make." Mm-hmm. Funny, but like nobody cares about the musical guest most of the time unless they do something controversial. And the thing with SNL I think that doesn't hook people is the fact that it's not just a YouTube channel. Like if they just did their skits on YouTube, they would probably be a lot better off and have a lot more successful show. But
it's, to be honest, where I see a lot of it, so yeah.
And I think the most underrated part of SNL right now is Weekend Update is, like, at one of its best. Like, Michael Che and Colin Jost are just, like, incredible. And their writing is so good. And the characters they bring on are some of the best characters. But a lot of people that grew up with SNL grew up in the areas where it was okay. Or grew up in the eras where it was okay to be flat out more offensive. Like you were allowed to, you know, like on SNL in the 2000s, they were still doing blackface. they were still doing a lot of things that now would be offensive. And now that they're kind of embracing a little bit more of like the woke culture, but also still poking fun at society, people are like, oh, you know, it's just a bunch of just SJWs and all that stuff. And I'm like, well, I mean, that's kind of, they're representing who they are as people. They're not going to write, like, you know, them doing blackface and stuff like that anymore because that's not who these people are. I mean, you could bring in an old vintage cast of Chevy Chase and all these people and you would still get your old, like, racist sketches. Like, John Belushi was in a lot of, you know, offensive sketches where he was, like, a samurai and stuff and people thought it was absolutely hilarious because, I mean, at the time, I mean, let's be honest, we probably would have laughed at it. I mean, it probably would have been one of those things we considered funny back then, but it's just not what it is today. So they have to try and, like, some of their sketches are just kind of bland. You could tell they didn't really have the idea for it. But it was interesting because Kanye tweeted out, because Issa Rae was the host, she's black, and she made a Kanye joke, and he tweeted out that SNL is just black people holding other black people back, which we all know Kanye's kind of like on the deep end right now. But yeah, kind of a valid point if you think about it, because I still feel like they do use, you know, like other races to hold each other back, but they also dish it out with white people. I mean, they make fun of white people a lot, but it is kind of weird when you have kind of, you know, only a few minorities in the cast, which isn't really representative of New York. And I just think that, you know, Saturday Night Live is not really built for people in Nebraska anymore. Like they don't, you know, they're not going to think it's as funny as it used to be. You know, it's just a different show. It's not what it used to be. And, you know, they don't, I mean, they are missing like some critical talent. So like some of the sketches that are, you know, classic, you know, the Chris Farley with the lunch lady and the Chippendales and Adam Sandler just doing his ridiculous voice and all of his songs. I mean, those are like generational talents and treats, right? So, I mean, my thing is, like, I still watch SNL via YouTube because, like, I could not watch it on TV as, like, an hour-long show. Like, that would just not be my thing.
There's no way you're going to like the comic and the musical guest.
There's no way I'm going to sit through it. And, you know, I just think that it's just a different show than it was. It doesn't mean it's any less funny. I mean, it's not like in its season 8 of The Office era. Like, you know, it's not just really bad right now.
It hasn't switched to a soap opera quite yet, you know, where you kind of all of a sudden we have to really care about the emotional depth of all of them.
Yeah. I mean, I feel like, you know, as far as it goes, I mean, I still think that Weekend Update has, like, the best shows in, like, what it ever had. And, I mean, that's going through, like, you know, Norm MacDonald, David Spade, you know, Seth Meyers, Tina Fey, you know, all these different hosts of Weekend Update, I feel like Colin Jost and Michael Che are just crushing it. And that's just because they're, I mean, when they do their Christmas episode and they write jokes for each other, it is just so funny. And it's, you know, it goes over the line too. And, you know, people don't realize that.
I know which one you're talking about. Yeah. And that was one where I truly, it was another one of like laughing till I cried.
Yeah.
When he had to read Michael Che's, the joke that he lost this year. I mean, I turn red and fall out of the chair now if I watched it again. Yeah. Like, it was so funny. Like,
yeah.
This, you can see, like, true friendship between those two, and it makes so much funnier.
Yeah.
Like, throwing each other under the bus like that.
There was a skit that they had a while ago on Weekend Update where they brought in a movie critic who was just on LSD, and he was giving his movie reviews as he was on LSD, and he just kept making less and less sense throughout the entire thing. And he delivers this, they ask him when did you see this or something like that? And he just looks at Colin, he goes, "You still believe in time, Colin?" And that's like one of the best lines I've ever heard of SNL, is just this on LSD movie reviewer. Like, the characters they have are just so great on Weekend Update. But, you know, like I said, like, even on the Bill Burr episode, there were still some skits that I was like, this just isn't funny. You know, and I'm pretty much an unapologetic Bill Burr fan, so.
He's super hit and miss for me. I prefer him usually in a talking format. Like, his stage is pretty good, too. Mm-hmm. But he did an appearance in Crashing, which, in my opinion, is possibly one of the funniest shows ever come out. Like, I mean, especially just having Pete Holmes' upbringing. Like, it hit so many of the small town GR, the small town Midwest vibes of of it. Like, it was so funny. But like Bill Burr's episode on that one, like, it, like, I thought was one of the strongest ones there was. Like, he's great when he's just kind of candid, you know?
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Like, that's where I think he really, really, really shines on. I used to hold that of D'Elia too. Back when.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate, you know, about the whole Chris D'Elia situation. I actually haven't even talked about it on the show, but it's like, you know, it's just indefensible, you know? And it's like, I paid tickets to go to see that guy live. So I was like, this is a huge bummer. Watch
Undateable all the time. I was like, he's the greatest. Like, you should watch all of his stuff.
Underrated show. I mean, it's just like, it's just really unfortunate because I used to listen to that podcast all the time, and now it's like,
10 minute pod.
Yeah. And then congratulations too. And I used I just feel dirty now. It's unfortunate. Yeah. But I mean,
I still have a bunch of them saved in my library, and I'm just kind of like, do I listen to them again?
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
I've tried listening to I Believe I Can Fly after watching the R. Kelly doc, and I mean, that doesn't quite listen or feel the same.
Yeah, like, it doesn't. I've
tried with the D'Elia ones. That's wildly less awful also, but like, still.
Yeah. The unfortunate thing was, like, as soon as like that happened, people were like, well, he was never funny to begin with. And I was like, well, he was kind of like, he kind of like almost replaced Louis C.K. in terms of popularity as like being the comedy guy. Like, he was really at the top, and then that happened, and now it's like, well, we can't obviously defend this or like this guy anymore. But I mean, as far as comedy goes, you know, like, when I went and seen him literally last year, and it was hilarious. You know, me, my brother, my wife went, talked about like how much of a great show it was, and it's like, it's just super unfortunate, you know, that you never know like what's hiding in, you know, someone's closet. But
I thankfully haven't seen anyone live that I regret.
Yeah.
Thankfully.
Yeah. I'm like, I don't know. Out of comedians, I'm like, I think like 7-1 now. it's like, you know, I'm like I'm mostly in the majority, but it's like, there's that one, damn it.
There's always the few. Like, it's almost like the career for the degenerates almost turns out a few degenerates.
Yeah. But, It's funny you mentioned Pete Holmes because I actually have that red book right there. My finger will point to it. Is Comedy Sex God by Pete Holmes. And if you haven't read that, incredible book. Absolutely.
No, I haven't, book. Actually.
Yeah, totally recommend it. It just goes even deeper into his life. And I think Crashing, it almost ended too perfectly because I really wanted more. Really, really wanted more. And, you know, the way that that last season had went, where he had kind of strayed off the path and stuff, and then, like, it all came back, I was like, come on, man. You just wrapped this up too nicely for me.
That did kind of wrap up. Yeah, I was really sad to see it not come back just because, I mean, it was – I still laugh at each one of them, like, rewatching them. They don't stop getting funny.
Yeah.
So I was kind of bummed it didn't get renewed, but, yeah, it did kind of – at that point, he almost was, like, stepping into, like, success, finally.
Yeah.
And so it was one of those, like, I wonder if it would have kind of started a tank now that he's kind of hit it. Like, almost like when Silicon Valley was tanking, when everyone could relate with these guys that were in the struggle. And then, you know, once they're struggling as billionaires, you know, it's kind of less relatable all of a sudden. Like,
were you into Silicon Valley big time?
Oh, so big.
Yeah.
It was so much in the way that I pretend I tell people that, like, the industry was like, except it's not funny.
Yeah.
And you know, none of those guys are funny in real life.
It's crazy how accurate it is to, like, working in tech. And the other part is TJ Miller was such a shining star of that cast just wasn't the same after he left. I mean, I still had to finish it because, you know, still a good show. Kamal is very funny. I always forget the guy's name who plays the monotone guy. It starts with the G, Guilfoyle. I always forget Guilfoyle's name, but he's the same actor that's in Spider-Man, the new Spider-Man movies. He's like a teacher, which is hilarious to me because I always think of him as Guilfoyle.
Oh man, he's in the NTSF show too.
Yeah.
But, of course, I'm blanking. Yeah, when it's on the spot. But
Guilfoyle's a great character. Jin Yang,
because that guy knocks it out of the park too.
Yeah, he's that guy has like a book on like emigrating to America and stuff. The guy who plays Jin Yang, which is really interesting. His whole story. I watched a couple Colbert interviews that he did where he talked about it. I haven't actually read the book, but he's an interesting character as well. I feel like he goes by like Jimmy something.
Maybe yeah, his name didn't, it like, you know, not to stereotype, but yeah, it was one like, oh, really? Oh, you kind of expect a little more.
Huh. Yeah.
but no, I was surprised at how fun he was on Twitter, actually. I follow some people just because they're naturally funny on Twitter, and like, I don't know any of their stuff, but I enjoy their tweets.
Oh, yeah.
I forget her name from Brooklyn Nine-Nine. Chelsea Peretti, yeah.
She's an example. She is absolutely hilarious, and I feel like she's going to, like, explode in popularity, like, once people can actually go to comedy shows again. Because she was, like, right at that tipping show. I'm dying to go to a
comedy show.
Yeah, we used to.
The last one I went to was Beth Stelling. How do you, like, follow up after that? You know, like, I'm sitting here like, well, man, I want to go see someone again, but I, you know, like, my last one was Beth. Now I got Beth plus, like, a year and a half. And it was like, man, the next people I see, they're not going to be funny. I'm going to be so amped and ready to laugh. It's going to put too much pressure.
Yeah, it's I miss comedy a lot. We used to run our own show over here, and we're still like, I was hoping that this thing that the coronavirus is going to be like Ebola, where we made a big deal out of it and then it went away. Yeah. And then that's not the case. So
we're all hoping for that.
No idea when we're doing another show, which is unfortunate. But the last show I went to, like, of a big name comedian, I think was actually Chris D'Elia. I think it was last winter. I think it was. I'm pretty sure that he was the last one. Because before him, I went to see Bill Burr and then Tom Segura. Or maybe it was Tom Segura then Bill Burr. I don't know. I can't remember. But
pretty hot lineup, though.
Yeah. I've seen Kathleen Madigan, TJ Miller, Kevin Hart, Bill Burr, Sebastian, Tom Skura, Chris D'Elia, Steve Byrne. Holy crap, he's actually so underrated.
So did you see Sullivan and Son for like the 10 seconds that was on?
No, I didn't. What is that?
He was on a short pilot called Sullivan and Son. Mm-hmm. And I mean, it did not last long. I think I was one of like 8 people that must have found it hilarious. I showed everyone it.
Yeah.
Like when you have like 5 roommates still in your mid 20s and like you're constantly kind of like, all right, well, I got the TV tonight. Like, you guys are going to love this show, and no one ever found it funny. But if you're already a Steve Byrne fan, Sullivan and Son is amazing.
I'll have to check that out because his stand-up is like so ridiculously underrated. And like,
I fully agree.
He was so interactive with the crowd when I saw him as well, which was just like huge for me. Like he did like a bunch of crowd work, and he was just like, it was just so polished. And I was, because I saw him at Grand Valley, which like sometimes comedians would come in at Grand Valley and they would do like a 10 to 20 minute set, and you could tell they were kind of just like phoning it in. And he like put like, I felt like 1,000% into like just destroying this crowd, which was just awesome. It was just awesome.
It'd be fun to do to college kids too.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't realize he was a crowd work guy, because when I think of him, I think of this bit that I still remember probably once every couple weeks. It happens so often where he talks about doing that fart that follows you.
Yeah. Yeah.
And the unexpected stop and like the wave.
Yeah.
It's like, I still remember it. Like, I still think about it because it happens. Like the bathroom I had in my office was one where like I definitely had that like really hope I don't run into anyone for like the next 8 seconds kind of thing. And I related so hard to it. I never stopped laughing.
Have you ever heard the mac and cheese bit from him?
I don't think I have.
So
wait. I did, but I don't remember it well enough to in any way claim that I could know what you're saying.
Where he's like in the hotel and he hears people, you know, doing their thing, and he relates it to mac and cheese, and that just like absolutely ruined the room at Grand Valley. Like everybody was dying. But then that Cardi B song came out, WAP. And the mac and cheese line, I was like, no, Steve Burr had this at like 2009, man. I was like, you don't get like this analogy. There's a whole bit on this.
And, you saved me, because I happened to be in a spot where someone was like, that they mentioned something like how mac and cheese is delicious, and I had kind of like, actually, I don't think that's what he means. And I it was kind of like, I guess now I'm not realizing I was kind of pulling back on that Steve Byrne thing of like, you know, when you stir.
Yeah.
I didn't realize I was remembering that from Steve Byrne. Wow.
Yeah.
I didn't realize how much he'd shaped my life.
Yeah. He's just, when they were doing shows in California, I used to always follow up on the like Comedy Store to see all the comedians that I was missing. Cause they'd post a lineup. And he was on there like a surprising amount, which I was glad to see that he was just like still killing it. There's not a ton of like people that I just think of as like true comics anymore, because a lot of people have their hands in like acting and podcasting and all this stuff, which I'm sure he's done. But like when I think of him, I'm like, man, he's just like such a solid stand-up, which is just awesome.
I can see that.
Yeah.
Are you more of are you like a stand-up, or are you more of like the comedy writer?
So I don't really write too much, and I just am kind of, since March, getting into the whole podcasting thing of like my own write. But I like doing the stand-up stuff. We used to do a lot of YouTube stuff in high school, and then I go through spurts of it, you know, because I just am more focused like on the day job side of it. But I like just like doing more like the stand-up and the podcasting, because it's just like more conversational. I've had some ideas that I've wanted to do of like cartoons and stuff, but like just never put like the effort to actually making them like come to life. But I'm like, this would be a great idea, and then it just never happens.
Yeah, it'd be great for that like someday assistant that will never come.
Yeah,
gotta notebook full of plenty of those ideas that just never ever come about.
Yeah, yeah. I've got, several albums that all I have to do is learn how to, be good at music first that, just have all those. So just, all these ideas that I'm like, I'm just never going to do that. And I was like, I'll do the podcast once a week and maybe I can contribute to something out of that.
So. I still have the goal of, I do at some point want to try. I've never gone up to the open mic with all right, here we go. We're going to do it. I've never come up with I don't even know how you say hello. I get stuck at that. It was if I had an idea that becomes one that I can build on and I can work on and I can see multiple crowds and try to work on, I don't know how to say hello to the audience.
Yeah. The best I've seen from people is when they don't ask, how is everybody doing? And they just open with something, whatever it is. Because I forget who it is. My buddy sent me. He's like, there's a rule of all these rules of comedy. He was like, don't ask people how they're doing. And every time I see somebody go up there and just go into it and not start with hey, how's everybody doing? Their sets, I feel like, just go just gangbusters. And so
I could see that. They're less needy. Yeah. You know?
But yeah,
you should see the MC that they have at the comedy club in GR.
Oh, at Grins?
He is everything you're just, yeah. He's everything you're just, well, I mean,
is it Stu?
I really don't know. It honestly it might be different by now. I'm kind of relying on, there were a couple of them the last few that I went. I didn't always see the same guy, but for the first maybe five, six shows I saw there, it was always the same MC.
Mm-hmm.
And he almost intentionally broke every rule that I was aware of in comedy. Of don't come out and don't be needy. Don't make a joke if you're going to don't ask for a name if you're going to forget the name.
Yeah.
Don't ask for birthdays and stuff like that. Yeah. But then you can't which one you had the birthdays? And if he got a laugh, he'd immediately start talking through it and stomp it out.
Yeah.
He would have been everything that you would have just, he was the exact opposite of everything you were just saying.
Yeah, but it's, comedy's a ride, man. When it comes back to life a little bit more, you should definitely, definitely try it out. I think doing it in the pandemic would be weird. Just because I've done a show in the pandemic and it's kind of weird to see people laughing through masks and stuff like that, which don't get me wrong, I'm a mask supporter, but I mean it's definitely a different vibe. It's a real different vibe.
I feel like raves and comedy clubs, you can't quite, you need it to be a little gross. You need to be a little close together. You need to kind of hit the shoulder of the person next to you that you don't know. And oh my God, this is great. Kind of.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The two hand sanitizer minimum is just a weird thing.
You charge so much if you don't put enough hand sanitizer on. It's awful.
But
the food's not even good.
It all tastes like soap. But hey, man, we are rapidly approaching the lightning round. So, so that is five questions that we're come up the top of the head. Excuse me, I just totally choked on my own voice there.
Yeah, just watch a little Yingling.
Yeah, nothing a little Yingling can fix. But but so before we do a lightning round, we're gonna toss it to you for anything you want to promote, anything you want to throw in the universe. Now is your time.
Sweet. Well, yeah, I actually don't have a ton to promote. I try to create things constantly that either are appealing visually or and philosophically. Like my Instagram is a one more time design, the Daft Punk reference for those of us that are in their 30s. I don't have anything my company's got, it's kind of doing its own thing. And so follow me on Instagram or Twitter. Send me funny jokes or show me cool designs. I really don't I don't have a lot to promote. I'm kind of just hanging in there with the rest of us. It's there's other things that need to be promoted. Other people can worry about it.
And we will.
I honestly just needed somebody to talk to during this pandemic. I'm in a dark basement by myself. Do you see what's going on here? There's one light back here.
Yeah.
I needed someone to talk to.
It's always funny when, like, that first half of the podcast just goes, like, from light to dark. And it's, like, it's progressively been more doing that more as, like, it's been getting closer and closer to winter. But we will link all of Derek's stuff below. And we have had an awesome episode. So now we are going to head in to the lightning round. And
let's do that.
The first question is, what are you drinking out of again? Because I know we're supposed to talk about that. And I didn't.
Well, you definitely don't have to. It's definitely not too much of a point of pride. If someone noticed that this wine glass was just constantly full, it wasn't an optical illusion. I do have a now empty little sidecar, as they call it. Sidecars used to be next to a Bloody Mary for a while. Now they're just a little bit of extra wine because it's, you know, a good amount of alcohol for low calories.
Yeah. So what is your favorite topping on a Bloody Mary?
Cheese cubes, actually. Okay. I'd like to pretend it's not, but the bar by me does offer like Colby Jack and Pepper Jack cheese cubes, and I get an entire like long toothpick full and shove that in, and like I pretend that it's like kind of part of the drink, but I end up just pulling it out, eating all the cheese cubes and drinking a regular Bloody Mary. That's for sure mine.
And that is completely respectable because I hate when everyone's like, oh, yeah, I need like a French onion pickle wrapped in bacon. Yeah. And I swear I've seen.
You can't even find the opening to it. Like, like eight toothpicks. Good. Like, no, I want like mildly. Honestly, I don't even want it to have the consistency of salsa, almost like the Clamato. Yeah. And that's it.
Yeah, I swear, whether it was a joke or not, I've seen a picture somewhere of someone having a legit full hamburger on top of a Bloody Mary. I think we just get way too in the weeds with these Bloody Marys.
It's too much. It's way too much.
Yeah.
Like, it's that you eat that much, you may as well just not even drink. You're already, like, eating the calories. Like,
Yeah. So my third question is, and I'm remembering back to the days when we worked together, what happened to the man bun?
I this isn't probably a popular opinion, but I do miss it every single day. I still, in my mental image of myself, see my head is still like a foot and a half or 2 feet from like beard end to man bun end when I first picture it. I was in the wedding of a really good friend in college, and he had a friend that he'd grown up with who was in a metal band. And I mean, to this day, I can't name a celebrity. I can't name anyone that has hair like I've seen this guy have.
Yeah.
And the thought of being the guy with the second best long hair in a bridal party was not something I could handle. And I mean, you probably remember me around then. I was kind of coming off of like the okay, let's clean this up. You know, you kind of had some years. There's a lot of like fraying and a lot of things needed to go, and it kind of turned into like, well, I guess it's time. And I still remember the haircut, and like it, you know, it went great. Like it looks fine, but I want my long hair. See, I miss it constantly.
See, now when I remember that man bun seeing it for the first time, I was legitimately impressed because I had heard about it before I saw it because everyone was like, new dude in marketing has a man bun. And I was like, okay, I'll go see this for myself. And so I saw the man bun. The first thing I thought of is I was like, someone at this company is going to confess their love to him because that is a legitimate man bun. Like, because like you'll see like people will be like, oh, I got a man bun. It's like, you know, just a little, you know, just a like little a
shark
thing.
Fin.
Yeah, it's just a little thing. And I was like, no, this man could have been a samurai back in the day. Like, this is a man bun. Of all man buns. So I was impressed.
So naturally greasy. Like I will say that I had a lot of pride in that I didn't like put a lot to it. It just, it kind of, you play hockey enough, you know, it kind of, you can kind of just learn to tie it on just kind of whatever it's got in it.
Yeah.
But yeah, it definitely was a room divider for sure. Like yeah. You walk in there with I remember I would always do a tank top with the butt. I needed a collared shirt to go to work. So I'd have a tank top and an unbuttoned collared shirt over it because that was collared and barefoot. And I know my manager hated that, but yeah, I remember like anytime I walked somewhere with that, it was like, well, there's going to be someone that is not into this guy.
Yeah.
And I want to find who it is and I'm going to stand really close to him and make jokes.
I mean, that was like the most hot button political thing before 2016. It was like, are we into man buns or not? Simpler
there's
times.
There's a dress that might be yellow or blue and we do or don't know if we like man buns.
Yeah. Much simpler times. We talked about hockey a little bit, that you're, you know, it's one of your pastimes. What did you think of this year's playoffs being in the bubble and all that?
I honestly don't even know if I'm okay to answer that. I watched since March. I think I watched one game.
Oh, okay.
I was okay with putting the asterisks on and like, hey, I mean, you know, it doesn't happen often. You know, it's a bit of an unusual circumstance. They canceled the Stanley Cup due to the flu in 1918 too. Mm-hmm. Like it's not the first Stanley Cup to get canceled. Like,
yeah.
Oh, well, we just didn't get it this year. And then when I saw them putting together like a 24 mega playoff.
Yeah.
After like 6 months of having their summers, like, I don't want to watch that. Like yeah. I can play in men's league and I'll see guys that are like in that same type of like team chemistry level that you are after 6 months off. Like I don't need to see missed passes and
yeah,
like empty stands and like they're not going to fight if there's no real like the hockey was great from the highlights I saw, but I just didn't get into it. There was a lot going on in the pandemic. I couldn't focus on too much.
Yeah, it was real weird to watch NHL and NBA playoffs in the bubble. And then NHL with the piped-in noise was weird, too, for me. But
the only team to do it right so far is the Denver Broncos with the South Park Stadium. They're the only team to have figured out what to do
during
this pandemic.
Yeah. Yeah, that's funny. All right, final question here. So where do you think sports go in the future? Oh. Like, do you think that we just call it a wrap, or do we actually try and figure something out? Because I don't know, my kind of opinion is I'm like, maybe we just call it a wrap on sports for a while.
You know, they were fine.
Yeah.
That was the most Larry David thing you've ever said in your life. Just call, we're good on the sports.
Yeah. You know?
As long as, you know what, the soccer seems to be doing well. I know that's going to like just signify that much more of a hipster, but soccer's still in line. So I'm kind of satisfied with where sports are at.
Okay.
If we could figure out a way, I'll get everyone to stop listening. If we could figure out a way to stop the NFL from ever showing up again so I could watch more soccer, I would be a very happy man. And I think it's a little bit more healthy of a sport too, because you're running and even though there is contact, it's very open and like it's somewhat healthy. Where the rest of them go, man. And maybe we bring the shields back in hockey. Who knows? I'm not sure where they go, and I'm just not in a rush. Like I have other things I'd rather watch. Like there's been great TV that came out. There's been even better comedy that's come out. Like,
yeah,
I don't know. They can take their time. Like,
yeah,
I'm fine.
If they cancel the NFL right now, I wouldn't be too upset about it, because I'm like 2-4 in my fantasy league and it's absolutely just killing me inside, because I won the championship last year and COVID has just completely dominated my fantasy roster. So I'm okay if they decide to cancel it, but I definitely had lose audience members over you saying soccer being more athletic than the NFL.
I know,
even though I agree that soccer is probably the hardest sport to play, because you're just constantly running. Like I played
defense and keeper personally, because I couldn't run very much. at least maybe I'll gain him back with the hockey. Like, I do love a good tough sport. I like a sport where you can actually fight. I like a sport where you go further than 3.5 yards before you need oxygen. Yeah. I just different strokes, I guess.
Yeah. All right. Well, I think that's the episode title of Different Strokes, I guess. That's hilarious. So this has been a great episode. Thank you so much, Derek. We will talk to you next time, my friend.
Absolutely. See you around, man.
All right. Take it easy.